Welcome to another edition of Get Lit with Literature. This is Monk, part two of The Burnout Society by Byung-Chul Han. Also noting that of another book that I read, one of the best books I've read in a while, it's longer, so I'm kind of working up to it. But it does segue with, it's kind of a good book to read before the one I read. It's from 1997, The Religion of Technology. The Divinity of Man and the Spirit of Invention by David F. Noble. That was mentioned to me by a friend, and I very much like it for showing the way that technology is viewed as as a redemptive savior with all the religious contexts behind it. And so that segues into the burnout society where religion is less influential nowadays. People can do things on their own. But back to the Burnout Society, I try to summarize this. Two of the notes that I made that the author describes are the tough word to say about immunology, immunological age into the neural age. Because again, he talks about the immunology as like warding off an enemy or dealing with something outside oneself, whereas in the neural age it is kind of oneself overly stimulated. You know, when you think about like a Zoom meeting, you're like sitting there by yourself. You know, there isn't an other, so to speak. And the other summary in the book is that he says that people, and again, this is one I feel like I could agree to parts of it, but not totally, but I get the overall gist, which is what I like about it, the book. The people have gone from the obedience subject to the achievement subject. So that before, the ages before, people were being obedient to the system, and now they are, in effect, in the achievement society, they're given the tools to do whatever they want, basically. Again, these are my interpretations of a lot of his statements, because I'm trying to simplify it to convey here in a few minutes rather than analyze the entire book. But so it's going from obedience to achievement, where the emphasis is on achievement, and hence that the lack of achievement leads to depression. And I'll read this, I'll read some of the underlined bits. Talking about the neurons, neuronal violence does not proceed from system foreign negativity. That's sort of the immunology. Instead, it is systemic, that is, system immanent violence. Depression, ADHD, and burnout syndrome point to excess positivity. Burnout syndrome occurs when the ego overheats, which follows from too much of the same. First section, beyond disciplinary society. Today's society is no longer Foucault's, that's a famous writer, Foucault, disciplinary world of hospitals, madhouses, prisons, barracks, and factories. It has long been replaced by another regime, namely a society of fitness studios, office towers, banks, airports, shopping malls, and genetic laboratories. 21st century society is no longer disciplinary society, but an achievement society. Also, its inhabitants are no longer obedience subjects, but achievement subjects. They are entrepreneurs of themselves. So again, I would agree to that to some degree, probably more in the European Western world, because of all the various prison population and the, you know, the sweatshop factories. So depends on which angle you're looking at. Some of his thing now is that this achievement society makes someone the predator and the prey at once. And he even makes a statement that it sort of removes the overt domination, allowing people to exploit themselves. And there's a lot here to do, a lot of statements on about depression. Depression is creative fatigue and exhausted ability. As excess work and performance escalate into auto-exploitation. So that gives some example of the self-exploitation, where one is, you know, working so much. But then again, in the context of this society and capitalism, many people are forced to have excess work in order to make ends meet. So it's not just onlining and choosing to do everything that way. There are some people who are forced, you know, essentially have to work. Excessive positivity also expresses itself as an excess of stimuli, information, and impulses. It radically changes the structure and economy of attention. Perception becomes fragmented and scattered. Moreover, the mounting burden of work makes it necessary to adopt particular dispositions towards time and attention. This, in turn, affects the structure of attention and cognition. The attitude toward time and environment known as multitasking does not represent civilizational progress. So here again, he's talking, this is what I like, even though there's you know, layers to it. But he's talking about the general, I would say you're a Western society, and anywhere else that is hooked up neurologically, that what is happening is an excess of stimuli, information, and impulses. And that is, this is literally affecting people's perception, their neurology, and their perceptions of the world. One thing that I strongly disagree, he makes a statement about animals are incapable of contemplative immersion. Either they are eating or they are copulating. I would very much disagree with that, because animals have a high level of consciousness. I think it was the 2004 Indonesian tsunami, which many loss of lives, but the indigenous peoples and the animals went up. They felt whatever they felt, or in their instincts, and they went up into the hills or the mountains, wherever it was. They went upward and avoided the tsunami and survived. So somewhat of the hyper attention, the sort of opposite of that, or the balance of that, is the contemplative. Since it also has a low tolerance for boredom, it does not admit the profound idleness that benefits the creative process. As a writer and a creative person, I can totally attest to that. The profound idleness that benefits the creative process. Walter Benjamin calls this deep boredom a dream bird that hatches the egg of experience. If sleep represents the high point of bodily relaxation, deep boredom is the peak of mental relaxation. A purely hectic rush produces nothing new. It reproduces and accelerates what is already available. So this is where I find it very insightful, when he talks about overachievement and too much of the same thing, and capitalism thinking that, you know, you can buy living rather than actually living. It reproduces and accelerates what is already available. So that, to me, very much sums up the pace and the treadmill of the rat race that's going on nowadays. What is beautiful and perfect does not change or pass, a state that eludes all human intervention. The basic mood that distinguishes it is marveling at the way things are, which has nothing to do with practicality or processuality. Modern Cartesian doubt has taken the place of wonder. And here's some wonderful quotes. It is only contemplative lingering that has access to phenomena that are long and slow. Paul Cézanne, a master of deep contemplative attention, once remarked that he could see the fragrance of things. This visualization of fragrances requires profound attention. In the contemplative state, one steps outside oneself, so to speak, and immerses oneself in the surroundings. About Cézanne, someone wrote, he would start by discovering the geological structure of the landscape. Then, according to Madame Cézanne, he would halt and gaze, eyes dilated. The landscape thinks itself in me, he said, and I am its consciousness. End quote. Only profound attention prevents unsteadiness of the eyes and yields the composure capable of joining the wandering hands of nature. Without contemplative composure, the gaze errs restlessly and finds expression for nothing. So here he's making a deep insight into the attention span that has happened nowadays. And he also makes a point about that life, another wonderful insight that life is made and things are made to seem more fleeting. Now, this especially with all the information and the news, and that has a lot to do with the media that changes the fear monger and the hyper lead story that lasts for a week or a year or whatever, that it has created a sense that sort of an anxiety feeling that life is fleeting and that one has to work hard to make the most of it and catch up and that kind of thinking. So I think again he's saying that this fast pace and the perception of reality is being manipulated, and that one of the balances is the slow down and contemplate. In this society of compulsion, everyone carries a work camp inside. This labor camp is defined by the fact that one is simultaneously prisoner and guard, victim and perpetrator. One exploits oneself. It means that exploitation is possible even without domination. That's an interesting, another thought-provoking one. Another fascinating bit, he says that acceleration abolishes all intervals. Activity that follows an unthinking mechanical course is poor in interruption. Machines cannot pause. Despite its enormous capacity for calculation, the computer is stupid insofar as it lacks the ability to delay. The general positivization of the world means that both human beings and society are transforming into autistic performance machines. One might also say that overexcited efforts to maximize performance are abolishing negativity because it slows down the process of acceleration. Human beings in society are transforming into autistic performance machines. So it's the autistic performance machines, very, very self-referential, narcissistic, and achievement, overachieving. Another thought-provoking line, rage, which gets a bad name. Rage is the capacity to interrupt a given state and make a new state begin. So he's talking about effective use of anger and emotion there. Rage is the capacity to interrupt a given state and make a new state begin. Think of the band Rage Against the Machine. And he mentions about depression being a response to the overachievement and the wearing out of the ego. That's about halfway through the book, and see, he's got a chapter called The Society of Tiredness. As its flip side, the society achievement and activeness is generating excessive tiredness and exhaustion. These psychic conditions characterize a world that is poor in negativity and in turn dominated by excess positivity. They are not immunological reactions presupposing the negativity of the immunologically other. Rather, they are caused by a too much of positivity. The excessiveness of performance enhancement leads to psychic infarction. And he talks about a difference between like an over like a natural tiredness that allows one to kind of slip into a kind of meditative state, sort of in the Asian Taoist way of non-doing. Tiredness enables the human being to experience singular calm, serene, not doing. Everything becomes extraordinary in the tranquility of tiredness. So again, that's a distinction between that kind of natural tiredness or hard work tiredness and the tiredness that comes from the frenetic go, 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 go until you have to stop. That's the sort of manic depressiveness that is a reflection of the society. Here's another summary. The tiredness of exhaustion is the tiredness of positive potency. It makes one incapable of doing something. Tiredness that inspires is tiredness of negative potency, namely of not to. A lot of these are very thought-provoking. The interval is a time without work, a time of and for play. So there's the pause there that's very significant. Following his Asian mention of Asian and Tao, the yin yang, there's the action and the pause. Even the picture for the Tao, the original picture for the Tao says that one moves forward and pauses and looks around and then takes another step forward, which is basically the opposite of Western society, which is go, and go. 24/7, nobody sleeps, that kind of thing. Whereas the Asian ancient philosophy is go and pause. And the deception comes with this phrase: today's achievement subject deems itself free when in fact it is bound like Prometheus. So that's the illusion. I think that's a very American thing, with this illusion of freedom. People think they're free, but they aren't really. And he also gets into a Freudian analysis, which is kind of a bit too deep. The context of Freud and repression and all kinds of interesting stuff, more than I want to get into here. Well, here's a distinction he draws with the obedience. The obedience subject is not a subject of desire or pleasure, but a subject of duty. So that's part of that shift from the obedience to the achievement, is that he's saying that, you know, in the world before, however long before, people have been mostly obedient, whereas now the focus is more about desire and pleasure. You know, you can, especially with, you know, in general with the culture and the online things, you can get online and listen to your music, you can watch your movie, you can talk to your friends, you can do all these things which are nice, but the focus is of desire or pleasure, which has created, as the book shows, different kinds of problems. The late modern achievement subject does not pursue works of duty. Its maxims are not obedience, law, and the fulfillment of obligation, but rather freedom, pleasure, and inclination. Freedom from the other switches into narcissistic self-relation, which occasions many of the psychic disturbances afflicting today's achievement subject. So basically he's saying what then when one does not consider the other, one outside oneself, then one becomes narcissistic and so overly self-referential. Because the structure of gratification has been disturbed, the achievement subject feels compelled to perform more and more. So it's never enough, you know, and I've heard that from a lot of people who, you know, in the arts or making a career, it's like, they like online, they feel like they have to, you know, put out, send out a blast or put up a comment, or it's like that with the social media, where if you're not posting something every day, you are lagging behind. And especially if you're like a journalist or, you know, have a following and you want to create that kind of thing, if you're not posting every day and keeping up like that, then, you know, you might lose your position. And a little bit more before wrapping it up here. Let's see. Psychoanalysis presupposes the negativity of repression and negation. The unconscious and repression, Freud stresses, are correlative to the greatest extent. In contrast, the process of repression or negation plays no role in contemporary psychic maladies such as depression, burnout, and ADHD. Instead, they indicate an excess of positivity. That is, not negation so much as the inability to say no. They do not point to not being allowed to do anything, but to being able to do everything. Therefore, psychoanalysis offers no way of approaching these phenomena. With its idea of freedom and deregulation, contemporary achievement society is massively dismantling the barriers and prohibitions that constituted disciplinary society. The dismantling of negativity serves to enhance achievement. Matters reach a general state of dissolution and boundlessness, indeed a state of general promiscuity from which no energy of repression issues. Now, this is where I find discipline, personally, and with my path of mystical Kabbalah, on the tree of life, there are three pillars, and one side has a very disciplinary type of energy at one point, and on another side is a very benevolent and abundant, and so there's a balance of a strictness and limitations and discipline, and a balance with freeness and abundance. So I apply that one. Looking at this book, I see that the culture has tipped to, in many ways, a lack of discipline and a lack of finiteness, which has a constructive use. And then one more aspect I'll highlight here that he talks about, relationships with people. In all the imaginary spaces of virtuality, the narcissistic ego encounters itself first and foremost. In social networks, the function of, quote, friends, end quote, is primarily to heighten narcissism by granting attention as consumers to the ego exhibited as a commodity. So I'll leave it at that with just stirring the pot. He also mentioned there's a quote here about the cult of performance. Just looking at who it is we are, what is this world doing to us, and who are we becoming to fit in and to be successful, and what are we giving up because of that, and what are we losing touch with, and what is that negatively affecting, and have we lost touch with, in losing touch with the ability to quiet and gaze out the window and contemplate, how much of that are we losing touch with, caring for the land and the water, and deeply caring for the people around us, instead of just trying to get likes and get by and get attention for what we do. What about that? Are we giving back? As cliche as that is. So thank you for listening. And again, The Burnout Society by Byung-Chul Han, and he's got some interviews and other articles online if you don't want to read the book. And thanks for listening. Be well.